Welcome to Radical Remembering with psychologist Dr. Narissa Williams. This is a weekly conversation where we explore ways we've internalized oppression and consider what it really means to live liberated. Each episode would leave you with intimate knowledge of the liberation process, sprinkle a little healing magic, and leave you with wisdom for your journey. As you get settled in for today's episode, please make sure to like and subscribe. And if you've liked what you heard at the end, please share. Welcome to another episode of Wisdom and Wellness. I'm super excited. I'm like always excited about every conversation, but I'm super excited about this conversation with Nicole Yard, who I'm going to introduce in a couple of seconds. I'm excited because Nicole Yard and I met just a few years ago. I think it'll be three soon. We met in a professional context, and we've had this great opportunity to continue working professionally, but to develop this really liberating kind of partnership, friendship along the way. And so I'm really excited for her to talk about her project. So Nicole is the CEO and founder of Black Rewrite. And so welcome, Nicole.
Thank you so much, Dr. Williams. And yes, we were definitely like swipe right on internet. Right. That's how we met, right? We met. It's so funny that we're doing this online, but we met online. Mm-hmm. And I think we physically met, maybe because of like during COVID, we physically met like a year later.
That's so true, yeah.
Yeah, but we were the best online relationship ever. So I am truly grateful for our working relationship and also outside of work, the partnership and the friendship that's blossomed. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So let's talk about Black Rewrite. What is Black Rewrite?
So Black Rewrite is an online platform for emerging and established writers to showcase their work in a nutshell. The platform is really about elevating Black voices through writing. I believe that writing is a form, just like any other creative artwork, writing is a form of liberation. Writing is a form of peace. For me, particularly, I'm a journalism major. I've been writing kind of informally all my life. And Black Rewrite came about because I was trying to connect back to who I was and who I am, right? And I've been in education for forever. And I want to transition to the things that I love. So I've been in a space where I got to do, I did what I wanted to do or I had to do. Now I'm in a space where I could do what I want to do. And Black Rewrite is just an expression of my love, a place that, like I said, I just really want to be able to have wherever you are on the spectrum of writing. If the only thing you've ever written is a grocery list or you've written your fifth book. Right? It's really for a space for writers, Black writers particularly, to express themselves.
I like that. I heard liberation and even what you were saying just there, like you did what you had to do, now you're doing what you want to do. That sounds really liberating, a really liberating experience. How have you felt like venturing more into what feels super aligned for you?
Oh my gosh. It feels freeing. It feels as though like my soul was sitting on a corner going like, when is she going to show up? And then when I finally got there, they're like, finally, right? So it feels so connected. It feels right. It doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like a job. I'm at the point of my life where I'm ready to fully transition into, like I said before, the things that I want to do. So it's very, very, it's very freeing. And it's also like honoring the voice that was silenced. Mm-hmm. Like it's also an apology to the voice that I silenced inside of me. Sorry, girl. I know I put you on the back burner, but I came and I got you now. So it's celebration. It's asking for forgiveness for the younger self. It is reclaiming my voice, one that was silenced for numerous reasons. And it is acknowledging all those things and going like, okay, it's me telling myself that I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
I love it too. So how did you silence that voice? I ask because I think that it's an important conversation, but knowing you from the outside, it's always, you know, it's like Nicole's voice was ever silent, you know? Exactly. And I think that happens a lot, you know, particularly with, I'm going to
generalize it to say all people, the women of the global majority, but mm-hmm. I will narrow into the Black woman experience because we, you know, we're known and seen as strong. Like we handle the business. I think you're multi-talented. I think that you can do so many things so very well, and you're magical, period, right? So, and I also know you as a fierce and strong advocate too, right? So, but other people don't always see our internal processes, right? So what is that part of you that you, like, what did that feel like internally to have silenced your voice, and why did you silence it?
What did it feel like to silence my voice? It felt like captivity. It didn't feel authentic, but I have to own that it also served me. Right? Mm. I don't think that anything that, whether it's positive or negative, that we are in doesn't serve some part of us, even if it's serving our trauma.
Yeah.
So I had to acknowledge that it was serving a purpose. It was feeding something, even though it wasn't feeding. And I had to admit that it was feeding a thing that was allowing me to stay complicit,
yeah,
and compliant. And what it was kind of feeding those cultural norms. I grew up, as you can hear from my accent, I'm Caribbean, I'm Bajan. And I grew up in a household, I grew up in a household, like many other Caribbean, particularly girls, in a household with boys raised by a grandmother whose mantra with children are seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. When you're spoken to, know your place.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that, and then add to that, when you go to school, authority is always right. There was absolutely nothing a teacher could say unless it had to be like physically egregious. And even then it was questioned, what did you do to make this teacher thing that he or she did to you? Right. So it was very, it was then the indoctrination was added upon when you go to school. You weren't questioning authorities. He didn't talk back. Right. It was very like colonial Catholic base.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the rules and everything. So you add all of that. And then you come, for me, my journey coming here to America, and they're like, you can talk back. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, right.
Seen and not heard. Speak when spoken to, right? And know your place. So all of those, that was my internal voice.
Yeah.
That kept my external voice silent. And I just didn't want to be out of place, right? You were raised to be prim and proper and all the things that would deem you as a good woman,
yeah,
as a good student, a good child. And it was all marred by silence.
Yeah.
And that really, really seeped into my DNA. So now that I'm in a space where I am finding my voice, it's almost like recalculating your DNA, right? Like turning the Rubik's Cube in another way. And it's, I'm not done. There's still moments. There are moments where I've gone too left and my voice has definitely gotten me in trouble, but I'm okay with that, right? I'm still a work in progress. But finding my voice and realizing that all the things that I just mentioned, it was like, oh, that's why you didn't speak up in that meeting. That's why you didn't lean in. That's why you didn't challenge your boss. That's why you went along with the go along.
Yeah.
And once I was able to kind of quell that part and go to who I am, I was like, I could talk. I have something to say. And it has helped. And for some folks, it's been uncomfortable, but that's okay. No one's going to die. But this idea of being silenced has now seeped into Black Rewrite, because I offer free courses to people of color. The thing that comes up a lot with the students and the folks in my session is fear, and fear of people hearing their voices, fear of what the world might think, fear of their thoughts. And part of the work is to kind of quell that and get to the root of that, and then help them liberate through their writing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been the journey of my so far. Because she still got some more stuff to say.
That, well, first of all, I like that last part, right? Because it's like, as I liberate, I create context for other people to also liberate as well. Mm-hmm. And then I also I really resonated with every part of your journey. One, because as you know, similarities, I'm Caribbean, immigrant Caribbean parents, even though I was raised in America, very much raised in a Caribbean context where the same thing, seen and not heard, and know your place, so much so that, and this is also a conversation I was having recently with another friend just yesterday, so much so that a lot of times in context, I won't even have, like, the thought doesn't arise anymore, right? I had so learned to self-silence that, let's say I'm in a group context, right? A classroom context, mm-hmm. in the middle of the discussion, you know, where everybody's like raising their hands and talking and different. And it's not to say I'm not intelligent. I think I'm intelligent, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't even rise anymore. So the impulse doesn't even rise for me to act on, right? Mm-hmm. And I had also not only become complicit, but Frantz Fanon calls it auto-oppression, where the oppressor without becomes the oppressor within. So nobody had to tell me to shut up. Nobody had to tell me to be quiet. I had so internalized what my place in this social dynamic that I began to do that. And I'm thinking specifically, I remember, and I've thought this thought in many contexts, right? Mm-hmm. But I remember being in like a faculty meeting at NYU, and this guy had started well after me, a year or two after me, in what seemed to me, because it always comes and seems as logical, it seems like, oh, it's wise to get into an environment. You have to learn the players and everybody. I think that is, some of that is feminine wisdom. Yes. Some of that is my personality. I'm a Cancer. Like, right. I'm in my shell until. But some of that is the ways in which I was colonized, right? So he came in, white male, and he's like automatically talking. I was like, you're like 2 minutes in this role. Like, why are you this free? And I also was judging him against the way that I had been oppressed and thought of it as wisdom, as opposed to realizing that it's my internalized oppression. Cause I'm like, you're supposed to be quiet. And I have done that in other contexts too. Like, why are you coming in here all loud? You don't know nobody in here. Like, you're supposed to be able to discern and not be all out there with your voice and all those kinds of things. So I like how you articulated that. And I also like to label that as we begin to think about, in what ways am I not liberated? And as we try to divide ourselves, because it seems so natural, right? Yes. That we can begin to think that it is ourselves, that it is. That's just my personality. I'm just not one to.
I'm shy.
Exactly. Oh, wait, now you're making fun of me because I said that and you're like, no, you're not. But I love that. Mm. One thing I also love about Black Rewrite and the ways in which, like, I've had this awesome opportunity, audience, to be in at least, I think, two sessions of your courses. And one thing that stuck out with me in the write-up of the event was about where we are in history, in the Black voice being trying to be silenced in regards to like books and what's read and what is allowed in school libraries and different things like that. And you said that it's a really important time for us to activate our voice in our writing. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. So that is what you just hit on is literally like the core, not like, but the crux of the mission of Black Rewrite. Yes, we want to be able to put new and established writers on a platform. But the reason behind that is because of the erasure, the systematic, unapologetic, public, no hold bars erasure of Black history from every part of education. Right? We literally just yesterday had a Republican candidate who's running for president who says America does not have racism. It never existed in America. Miss Nikki Haley, the lady who's an Indian but changed her name to Nikki, right? So racism does not exist in America. Like, that is a statement that is being made by someone who wants to be the president of our country. Like, Black people lynch themselves, but that's another show for another day. But it is bold statements like those that are put on an international platform that was the thinking behind Black Rewrite. It is a space that my thinking was and still is that for every Zora Neale Hurston, for every Toni Morrison, for every Alex Haley that they take off of the shelves, we are going to put 10 and 20 more Black folks Amen. On the shelf. Because 10, 20 years from now, they should be reading about Dr. Nerissa Williams because they're trying to take off James Baldwin. So if I can be a dot in that line, in that lineage, right, in that tapestry of kind of like emancipation and mm-hmm. putting Black writers back on, then that's my contribution to it is Black rewrite. It's fighting back against folks who do not want our history to be told.
If you enjoy listening to Radical Remembering and would love to get the season dropped before everyone else, if you want exclusive invites to live and virtual events and could benefit from daily liberation inspiration, like affirmations, thought-provoking questions, and daily guidance, then download our free app, Living Liberated, in the App Store or on Google Play. You can also find the link below in the description box.
And if you're going to take away our history, we're going to start continuing to make it. So part of the classes and part of Black Rewrite, when I'm just talking to the students, is like, I really don't care what you write. You could publish a cookbook about how to make flour. I don't like write the alphabet backwards, whatever it is, especially this day and age where there's so many ways that you can self-publish, publish. We have to be just as intentional, actually more intentional. We have to be even more systematic, more unapologetic about putting Black writers on the shelves as they are and putting taking them off. And yeah. that's my contribution to this movement. It's very, very passionate to me. Again, I grew up in Barbados, a system that is still colonialized, but it didn't stop me from learning about certain things. It's only when I came to America that I understood and read and learn about the huge historical impact that my little island had on the slave trade, like how we were part of that, right? It wasn't really taught back in my day, not in a real authentic, culturally responsive way.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, they had some slaves, they were freed, here's, you have your day. But it was through books, right? It was through reading, it was through education that I began to appreciate my little island even more and understand the system. It was through Toni Morrison, even though I remember at 21 trying to read Paradise and going like, Toni, I don't know when you're dreaming, but when you're awake. Like, if you ever read Toni Morrison's book, you know that she switches out in and out, and it took me forever to read, but just reading it was amazing. Reading Malcolm X was amazing. Yeah. And it really ingrained in me and understood, helped me understand who I was. And then going to like reading Sir Hilary Beckles, from Otto Barbados, who's just an amazing author, and just understanding more about my culture. So books for me was a way to get home when the passport was expired, right? Or when I couldn't get on that flight, that was a way for me to connect. And it was very liberating.
Yeah.
So when Black Rewrite came about, I want to be able to get that same feeling. But more importantly, it is my contribution to folks trying to erase, like, how dare you try to erase who we are. And the more Black folks that I could get out there and encourage to write and help them break through their barriers, help them find their voice, help them overcome the procrastination and all the barriers that tell them that they shouldn't. That is, if I leave the earth, that will be my legacy. That someone went through our classes, someone went through our Black Rewrite and decided, I'm going to put a book on the shelf.
I love it. You know what I love about it too? Well, first of all, there was something that you said. I hope that is already a meme. You said, for every book that they try to take off, we want to put 10. Have you
already? You know what?
Okay, exactly. And so another thing that I'm hearing also and really, really valuing is that, well, one, this is counter-storying too. We're also telling our stories rather than having our stories be told for us, because these sensationalized versions of what Blackness is, is that one, they tell a unidimensional story of who we are, right? Yes. We're a monolith and yes. all those kinds of things. And another thing, I actually just saw, we didn't even intend to see it, but we just saw American Fiction. Okay. And have you seen the commercial?
I've seen the commercials, but I definitely have to watch it.
Worth seeing in this conversation. Okay. It's about an author who was writing books and and they're, you know, trying to fit him into black literature, and he's like, what? It's about philosophy. And you know, it's a good social commentary and worth viewing, right? Okay. But another thing that I wanted to, about that last point, like this filling out of who we are, right? We're not just a monolith, right? But it also brings me back to this conversation that I saw between Tyler Perry and Spike Lee some years ago, right? And in the conversation, because you know, there are a bunch of people who are like, why is Tyler Perry telling these stories, and why are they always depicting the same, you know? And I was very much feeling like that too, like, oh God, here we go, another Tyler right. Perry story that, yeah. the, you know, this is black, you know?
Exactly.
And Spike Lee was saying something similar, yeah. But Tyler Perry's response was very valid and strong to me. He was like, might it also be that we have different perspectives? You're from the North, right? You're from Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and I'm from the South, and I'm telling Southern stories and you're telling Northern stories, Northern Black right. stories. And really what he was saying too was just that I'm superimposing some stuff here, right? The problem is not really that one person is telling this kind of story about the Black experience. It's that we don't have enough people telling stories about the Black experience, right. so that like, oh, well, this one, we can yeah. get so mad at the way that this one is telling the story, because then now people are thinking that. And right. really it's because we've been kept out of a system, and right. we haven't had multiple versions of our narratives to have a full and more multidimensional, more multifaceted understanding of the Black experience. And it's very much a condition of oppression, right? Yes. Like, and how stories are told and different things. Yes. So I love the fact that you're challenging us in writing, not only to think of writing as something for our own personal liberation, which you've made a very clear point about how it is, but it's also for our collective liberation. Yeah. So good yeah. work. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm trying. Yeah, you know, and part of what you said too that kind of struck me is that, and this is, I'm pretty sure people have been trying, but we tend to do our art through the lens of the white gaze. Mm. And I think, again, superimposing on Spike Lee, and I remember the conversation between Tyler Perry and Spike Lee. A lot of it was, and a lot of the flack that Tyler Perry gets is like, you know, big Black woman in a dress, a kind of over-exaggerated. And I was definitely one of those people. I was like, Madea again, right? Yeah. But there are Madeas. And yeah. that was his point. He's like, I grew up with Madeas. And why are we trying to silence her mm-hmm. and make her prim and proper, right? Or even erase her completely? Through whose eyes? And for whom? Because what he's saying is that when that was his mother, that was his grandmother. So if you take her away, who are they looking at?
Yeah.
Right. Who are they looking at? So you're telling me that I can't represent, you know, my family. I can't represent people who I went to church with. How many of you, I'm not, of course, from Dow South, but I've gone to church with the hats and the
yeah.
Shagamadamas and, you know, catching the Holy Spirit in the church, like right. you know what I mean. I've had in the roads, or the woman who has the weapon in her purse, we don't mess with, because she is fire.
Yeah,
so I saw some of my family, some of my friends, some of the people I grew up with. My grandmother was a Madea. God rest her soul. She didn't have a gun, but she always carried something in her purse. Mess with her. You know what I mean? And then go to church on Sunday. Praise the Lord. Yeah. But so I think it was part of that, and part of why sometimes, or what I have seen when people really want to write authentically or express themselves authentically, to no fault of ours, because it's been 400 years, so you can't just do it like that, is through the lens of white folks. How yeah. are they going to see us?
Policing.
Right? So, and I think some of that was Spike Lee's, again, superposing, never met the man. Some of that could have been what he was putting out. How are you going to get us looking stupid in front yeah. of these white people?
Right.
Right? And Tyler Perry, in another interview, he said that, you know, he's like, keep your Oscars, keep your white accolades. That's yeah. not who I'm doing it for. And clearly, he's a multi-billionaire. His movies sell out. So there's an audience for it. and using him as an example, that is liberation.
Yeah, yeah.
To go against everything, right? All the studios, all the people who was like, you can't do this. I was like, I'm going to, and then end up where he is. You know, whatever you give or take about however you feel about him, the messaging is, I'm going to stick to who I am. I'm going to stick to what I know. I'm going to cater to the audience that I know. And look what can come of it.
Yes.
And you have to appreciate, whether, like I said, wherever you stand on whatever side, appreciate the work ethic.
Yes, yes.
Yes. And to me, that is this liberation.
Me too. Me too. I agree. I agree. I had a thought, but I don't even remember anymore because I was really attuned to what you were saying. But it's so, when we think about liberation, because this podcast really is all about how we make the abstract concrete, right? Mm-hmm. So how we make this abstract sense of what liberation is. Like, it's not just like, oh, we're fighting for, like, how do we materialize it in our personal lives? And I think that we're hitting on a lot of nuggets here about how we materialize it, how we embody it in our mm-hmm. in our personal lives. So
yeah, I'm enjoying
this discussion.
Thank you. I mean, it's and I think for me, one of the messages is that, again, it's nothing that's overnight. Yeah. And give yourself grace for when you go back to your default.
Yeah.
Right? When you sit in that meeting or in that boardroom and you know you should speak up, but you don't. Don't beat yourself up for it. Because there's also a nuance of also knowing when to speak up. Right? Yeah. And also knowing the place. So if you think that you come home and you go like, damn it, I should have said this, that is okay. That is okay, sis. Yeah. Because it's not a journey that happens overnight. It is not a switch that just comes on and off. It really is a process to get to a point where you could go, I'm good. I can say this. I can do this thing. I'm going to push through, knowing that I'm pushing through for the greater good and for myself. For the benefits of those, not doing anything negative, because we're not telling you to push through to a rubber bike and say, oh, you're free. But we're saying that whatever you're doing is within, you have listened to your soul and you've listened to that inner voice and you're answering that call, then give yourself grace
mm-hmm.
in the process.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. You are always someday moments you're going to get an F, but that doesn't mean that you failed. It just means that today you ask for forgiveness and you keep moving forward.
It's a myth, right? And it's a myth that changes linear and it's rooted in both colonial and patriarchal ways of being, like in this if then kind of thinking, well, if I do this, if I start on this liberation journey, then I'm gonna be liberated, right?
Right, right.
It's a process, and it's in our everyday decision making, and we choose in every day, in every minute of every day, how aligned will I be with my power? What liberated choice will I be? So I like that you, in any behavior change, there will be some regression going back, defaulting back to what was the norm, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's simpler than just like, oh, well, you know, we have neural pathways developed for all of our behaviors. So when we default back to a behavior, it's also a psychological process, right? Mm-hmm. It's a neurochemical process that we would so naturally go back to what was safe and what worked, the defenses that worked, the survival mechanisms that worked for us for so
mm-hmm.
long.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that we have to, you know, also have grace for ourselves in the process and to know it's not a one and done. Like this is a whole lifetime's mm-hmm. commitment, you know, to getting it right. Because all of this has been about robbing us of our own power, our personal power, social power, collective power.
Correct. And the other part to that too is that, yes, give yourself grace and also don't think that liberation and freedom means full peace, right? Or absence of challenges.
Mm.
Because the more liberated you get, the more you own your voice, the more you're going to get pushback.
Mm-hmm. No lie.
Right? That, and you have, it is a space, when we talk about brave space, it is a brave space that you have to prepare yourself to step into, because, you know, people think that peace means absence of violence, but it doesn't, right? There's two things can exist at one. You can have peace and challenges. And to gain peace, you have to get challenges, right? Like Martin Luther King, you know, we just celebrated that a couple of days ago. He was like, well, I think that we should have peace. And everybody was like, sure.
Right.
Let's give it to him. Right? Like you just didn't, it just didn't work that way.
Yeah.
So you have to also, in this journey of liberation, it is liberation, but arm yourself. Because you are now going to show up in a way that people are not accustomed to you showing up. And that is going to bring pushback. You're going to show up in a way.
Liberation is 100% about being in right relationship with our power. It's so easy from day to day to disconnect from our source and forget who we really are. On our app, Living Liberated, we have the tools to keep you plugged in. You'll find a library of affirmations, guided meditations, guided journeys, and tapping sequences to keep you in a state of alignment with who you really are. Topics range from self-love, healthy relationships, activating our DNA, to guided journeys with your ancestors. Download our free app, Living Liberated, and start your free 7-day trial now in the App Store or Google Play. You can also find the link for Plugged in the description box below.
That people don't want you to show up because it benefited them when you were silence. And now you dare to speak up, and it's not, and it's congruent to who they have seen you to be, and it doesn't work for them anymore. It doesn't work when you are the assistant director and you were silent to the director, and all of a sudden you're speaking up, and they're like, "Wait, what? You have exactly. a voice? You are? I need you to be silent so I can shine." Yeah. So you know, and you could. Whether it's your family, whether you're in a relationship, whatever situation you're in, brace yourself that the more liberated you become, the more you find your voice, the more you hone into who you are, guarantee it that you're going to get some pushback, but that is okay.
Yeah. I think it's you have to stay well resourced with this going into it when you have this knowledge that like there's going to be pushback. It's not necessarily going to be the absence of challenge or struggle, right? You have to be well resourced. And, you know, well resourced is a whole conversation that we can go into. It includes self-care, having proper sleep, having proper nutrition, having a support, a community, a system of support that you can bounce these ideas off of, and
eliminating, you know, folks.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's important for us to be well resourced. And also, I like to also preemptively say that people talk a good talk of liberation until they have to give something up. Right.
Yes.
So it made me think of a conversation here, and you talk made me think of a conversation in a work context that I've had, right? When everybody's like, yo, you know, we're so, you know, we're anti-racist. We're so, you know, culturally responsive, culturally competent, all of this talk, right? And then I named pay differentials, really, because what looks inequitable to me is the fact that you and me were hired at the same time, except that I'm a Black woman and you're a Black man, and there's a $10,000, $15,000 pay differential, right? And specifically, I was told, and this happened, but the person who I'm talking about is actually an ally. So this is not necessarily to demonize him, but to make an example, right? This happened even when I advocated for myself, and I was like, and I pushed for, before this person was hired, I pushed for more money. I was like, well, I'm coming from here and I'm already making this, but I'm coming to a private institution rather than a public one, but my salary is decreasing. And they were like, the person I was negotiating my salary with was like, what'd she say? She, right? You hear that? What'd she say? So, you know, so internalized the gender oppression that she also then became an arm. But basically she had said, one thing she said was that, oh, I can't pay you higher than the other person in the department who, you know, is in that role. Yet a month or two later, somebody comes in and they get paid like 10 to 12, maybe even $15,000 more, right? So lies first and foremost. But I'm in the department that I was in, they were pay inequities, right? You talk that good talk about equity, but then if it came down to, okay, well, let's make it fair and equal so that Nicole gets what Narissa gets, is it going to be the same, like, yes,
right.
Or is like, whoa, wait a minute.
Right.
So people talk this talk until there actually is a redistribution of resources, because liberation, social justice calls for a redistribution of resources. Yes. And people don't always include that part, think about that part, like that part.
Yes. Because it's this idea of, I want something to happen, but not me. I'm not putting not my salary, but I want it to happen, right? I've been an educator, so I've definitely heard those who talk the talk, the anti-racism, that, oh, I'm an ally. And then they go through the checklist of the books that they've read. Yeah, of course, I've read Golden Muhammad, and, you know, I've read White Rage and Robin D. I've read all those things. I get it. Great. Now, what are you doing about it? Wait, what? Oh, I thought I was just supposed to read. Right? And I think that they get it because they're just reading the things. But to your point, like, liberation is an action word. Right? You have to do something. It's not just. The act of liberation, there is no one that I could think of that did liberation on a national or international level and just did it for themselves.
Yeah.
And me, someone could challenge me. I haven't read all the things, don't know all the people. But true liberation, when you talk about the great leaders, Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, whatever you feel about them otherwise, you know, Pablo Freire speaks about his pedagogy of the oppressed. It was never, how can I get myself out of this thing? Mm-hmm. It was never the I. So if you're really, really talking about liberation, it may start with you, but you're not doing it really authentically if you're doing it for yourself.
Yeah, it's multi-level.
It is, right?
Yeah. Really, you have to work in you, right? Because you have to deconstruct these mental paradigms, right? Mm-hmm. So the ways in which we've cognitively internalized these relational patterns, right? So you do have to do your work, but that alone is not sufficient. We have to think about, the Four Eyes of Oppression talks about intrapersonal oppression, mm-hmm. interpersonal oppression, institutional, which is also structural, systemic. And then also ideological, right? So we have to be, if we actually want to experience change, we have to be working on all four levels. Right. Otherwise, if I'm doing all the things for myself to decolonize my site, but the institution continues to reinforce it, then I'm just being in an institution mm-hmm. that, one, over time, I may give up the fight because it's too hard, right? Or else I can leave the institution, which has happened, which is my life, which is why I work for myself now. Right. But it is, you know, but we're always still interacting with ideologies and systems that are reinforcing it. So it must be a multi-level kind of approach and intervention. I agree with you.
Yeah, it can't. And like you said, I think that some people stop at the I.
Yeah.
Which is, like you said, you have to start with yourself. And, you know, Yolanda Van Zandt talks about filling your cup. What is in the cup is for you. What overflows is for other people. So you have to fill your cup first. And I definitely believe in that. But it doesn't, to your point, it doesn't stop with just you. You have to do all of it to create real, real change. And it's also so fulfilling. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really wanted to go back to the I, once you do those four things and it becomes full circle, you feel good. You feel good that you've made a change. At least I think for me.
Legacy. Right. You said legacy earlier.
Yeah.
What is your legacy?
What's your legacy? What are you doing? How are you
contributing? If one of us ain't free, none of us are free.
Come on now. Right. Harriet Tubman didn't have to go back.
Okay, exactly.
She's like, I'm good. Oh, shoot. We in Canada.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, it isn't, to me, it's not the legacy. It's not within the DNA that we come from. Yeah. As people of African descent, we're communal. Right? Naturally, it's about the community. Now, granted, colonialism has deconstructed that, and we've gone into this idea of whiteness and individuality, which is very anti who we are, I think, as a people. But at the root of who we are tribes.
Yeah,
they're communal. There's a reason that cultures ate with their hands so that they could connect with the food, because the food connected with the earth. So there was this whole line of nurturing your body. You thank the earth, you thank the food, everybody's, there's a thing behind it, right?
Yeah.
And that's just one example, but we have come to this individualistic way of thinking. So if you decide to go through this idea of liberation and you go, all right, I'm good.
That English didn't get it. Exactly. You didn't get it. You understand the message.
You did not. You didn't look to your ancestors. You didn't look through your history. You just didn't.
Yeah.
And you are carrying out the white man's work without him even being present.
Right.
So he's up there going like, thank you very much for carrying on my franchise.
Yeah.
Right. Because I believe racism is the best and most successful franchise that has ever been made. It is not the owner to be present, but it runs on its own really, really well.
And when you think about franchise and you think about how in Germany and Hitler and the Nazis modeled their hierarchy after the racial hierarchies they saw here, and how South Africa also. So franchise is like such an appropriate term when you think about
best
it.
Best franchise, best words, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you talk about Germany, it was, and I cannot pronounce his name, and I don't even feel bad about that. When he was looking at the skulls and he began to name them, and where this idea of hierarchy and race and knowledge and all that came about, and looking at the African skull and going, well, they are the lower, you know, they're the less intelligent, they're not human yet, and all the things that was labeled on us, it really, of course, we know it set the tone, but we also know, of course, it was complete, utter, not like non-science, right? And that has continued to perpetuate into and evolved into all the things. But you're right, it is the best franchise. It was through, you know, people always talk about there were slaves in other, that's usually like the white counterparts. Well, Romans had slaves and whatever, whatever. But what America did really, really well, right, because of it's a capitalist society, is that it took racism to another level. It took it to, it ingrained it into the institution and gave it legs, right? So it was, it might have been a mom and pop store in other countries, but here we was like, we can make this into a mall,
right?
Right? A mall in every institution. We're gonna put it in healthcare. We're gonna put them all in education. We're gonna put it in policing and in just like you name it.
Yeah.
And what America did really, really well was that they was able to ingrain it into every system, into capitalism, into healthcare. So now it's so intertwined into the system that it can't replicate. It's the best franchise ever.
If not interrupted, if not dismantled in some way, it has everything it needs to continue to reproduce itself all the way down to the psyche.
Yes.
All the way down to the psyche. If I even if we think of, so when we talk about intrapersonal oppression, right? So we're internalizing oppression and it's manifesting in internalized superiority or internalized inferiority. Even that right there continues the replication. So it's like, I'm not going to apply for the job. They don't really get people like me, or it might manifest an imposter syndrome. I don't really belong here. Mm. You know, I'm smart as everybody. So all of it, the whole system, the whole structure is made in such a way that it will, if not interrupted, if not for our personal and collective liberation journeys, it'll continue.
Yeah.
I have a question, sure. Nicole, right? So I'm curious about your liberation journey. Like, mm-hmm. how did you get where you are? We've heard that you're a reader, mm-hmm. right? You educate yourself, mm-hmm. right? And I also imagine that it also comes with growth, right? Because you get into a certain decade and you're like, not anymore, right?
No, right. That ain't hot.
Exactly. What else for you? What else has contributed to to who we see? And we knowing also that there is like no end point because our systems are not liberated. It's a continuous process. But what else has contributed to where you are today?
It's so funny you said that because the first person that came to mind was my is good friends, right? So I believe in the village, but it was we talk about lights going off. Last summer, I had burnt myself up. As you know, I'm an educator. I was doing change agents, which is an academy that's is around liberation, that the one and only teaches. taught by you. But I was going so hard for so long, nonstop. And in June of last year, I felt like I was in Shawshank Redemption, just counting down the days, right? Like making it on the wall until the school year was done, because I was burnt out. I had nothing else to give. And I saw it and I felt defeated. And I really took some of the summer off to just didn't want to do anything. And my partner at the time, I was telling him, like, I don't want to do these things. And I feel really, and he being very supportive. But one day I was home. Oh, this is so embarrassing. I was home like around 2 o'clock in my robe, maybe watching Seinfeld for like the 20th million time. And he called as he was at work. He's like, what do you do all day? And they querying me because I'm stubborn. I got defensive. Like, what do you mean? You don't ask me what I do all day. Da, 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 right? That's what I said in my head. And I was like, nothing, because I'm tired. And he gave me this speech about reconnecting and you're smart and yada yada, and I understand what you've been through. He said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I was mulling over the idea of like joining working classes and just getting back into, because my soul felt empty. I don't know if you've ever had that feeling where you're like, I am doing all the things. I'm attaining success, you know, realms of success in all the things. My bills are paid. I got a couple of dollars in the bank, 401k, IRA. Like, I've done the things, you know, but I am not feeling fulfilled at all. Like, all the boxes are checked off. The resume was good. I was getting job offers at the time. Like, all the things were checking off. Credit score was nice. You know what I mean? Like, girl was, the things were there. And I felt empty, completely empty. And after the conversation with him, I told him that I was toying around with doing these things. And I started joining writing groups. And even and after like free writing groups, and I remember sitting in one and I was the only Black girl. It was draining. So I went, of course, he's my thought partner. So I went back to him. I was like, there's a really good part of it that I get to be in these spaces, but I don't want to explain why Black Lives Matter. My writing is different than theirs. And it just wasn't like everything was it wasn't clicking for me. And he said, so why don't you create the space? So that's what you do for your job. This is literally what you do. You create spaces. How about you create a space for yourself? And Marissa, when I tell you that was like, for me, not for a company, not for an institution, not for a program, for me, I've never done that. In all my years, I have never done it. For me, raised millions of dollars for students, raised identity thing, citywide initiative, hundreds of skip. I've never done it for me. And that put such a fire inside of me. Within 2 weeks, I created an Eventbrite page. I said, this is what I'm going to do. I came up with the name. And you got to love him. And he saw it, he was like, I love it, but this is bleak. Because he's a Taurus. He's very, very blunt. I mean, love, but he's very blunt. And he does websites. So he created, and he's like, if you give me all the content, I'll create a site for you. And he did that. And within 3 weeks, I launched my first class as a test. And since then, I've been, you know, building on Black Rewrite, publishing authors, I have a national newsletter, updating websites. I just finished my book and trying to figure out the way, you
Hey,
know.
hold on. We just finished your book. Is
Just
this a book that I know about, or is this another one?
this is another one. So I'm in between like two. This one is the book goes along with the course,
Okay.
and then of course my love for right my love is around suspense thrillers, because and trying to be Like, I love like the John Grisham and the Robert Ludlum, who does Bourne Identity. So I love those kind of Tom Clancy books. Mm-hmm. But the pure fact that I can name these men are three white men.
Yeah.
Who dominate those spaces. So and maybe they are black women who are doing thriller suspense, but not to the media level and international level that you could just simply say John Grisham. Everybody's like, yeah, of course. Stephen King, of course. Right. And that's a genre that's my passion also. So I'm still writing that one, but the first one is complete.
Nice.
And it just really put me on a journey. So, you know, really long response to, it was my partner and it was friends who were like, well, you know, again, right? Like I said in the beginning, my soul is waiting on the corner going like, when is she show up? We've been here for a minute. It was that. It was having an encouraging circle and an encouraging network. And that's what, when you mentioned earlier about, you know, your resources, why it's so important to have the right resources, not the person who's going to blow smoke up your, or the person who's going to discourage you because they don't want to see you get, you know, you have to decipher the person and or persons in your life who is going to breathe life into you and also reciprocate that, breathe life into them. Or breathing life into someone doesn't mean agreeing with everything. Don't be that bobblehead friend. Like everything they say, you go, this is great. But also being able to give honest advice and honest guidance and be able to receive honest advice and honest guidance, even when it doesn't feel right. So when I'm on my couch watching Seinfeld in my robe at 2 p.m. and he dared to challenge me and it didn't feel right, and I wanted to be my, what you trying to say, right? I wanted, in my head, that's what I was. And because it, but it didn't feel good because he touched a sensitive spot.
Yeah.
But I had to sit back and go like, okay, he has my best interests. He's right. I'm not going to tell him he's right because I'm still stubborn. And it's not yet. But I was able to receive it. So to be able to receive uncomfortable information, that it comes with love, genuine, authentic love. Yeah. And from that, because of that one conversation, I was able to develop Black Rewrite. And he was like, and that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right. So that was, you know, outside of my voice, it was also having someone who believes in you. And I do not believe that we were put on this planet with 8 billion people to do this thing by ourselves.
Yeah.
We're not. Everybody needs someone. I do not believe, again, this goes back to whiteness, this idea of bootstrapping. Well, somebody had to give you the boots.
Okay.
Where did you get them from?
Right.
So you got out.
Exactly. Right?
Unless you were in the back with some leather, where did you get the leather?
Right.
Right. Like, it all goes back and connects to somebody. So this individualistic concept for me is one that I reject as part of my liberation.
Yeah.
You have to tap into your resources. And with the book, it's called Not Just Words, A Journey to Freedom, Using Freedom Dreaming to Journal. Mm. And the concept of freedom dreaming is just that, right? It's manifesting on 100. It is really, but it's not only just manifesting, it is pulling all of your resources that you have in order to get the thing that you want to get. So it's not sitting at home on faith and going, I hope this happened. I hope Amazon is going to deliver me the thing, whether it's the good man, the degree, or whatever. Like, it doesn't work like that, right? You actually have to do something in order to get the thing that you want to get. And the book is a guide to people to manifest their dreams and manifest whatever that goal is. But in this case, of course, it's writing. And I take them through all the things. I think about all the barriers that you encounter as you're trying to liberate yourself. So like the procrastination, honing your voice, losing your passion, finding your passion, understanding that you're standing on the shoulders of giants and you're not the first person to go through this liberation journey. And I give examples, whether it's from mostly going through the BIPOC community, whether it was, you know, Japanese or Middle Eastern and African-American, like every culture has someone who went on this journey and this is how it manifested. Now let's take you on yours.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
And that's the work. That's the book. And by the end, and it's not a 30 days to 365. I didn't want to put any time constraints on it because it's your journey. You could pick it up anywhere. You could pick it up in any part of it. You choose a chapter that speaks to you. You choose a part that speaks to your journey and to your liberation. And it's not just telling you these things, but it actually gives concrete strategies and exercises that you have to do. So that you have to do some writing. How about that, right? So there are writing prompts and there are, like I said, there are works, there are exercises, because I'm still an educator. So I'm still want to teach something that you go through that would help you find your voice and teach you to write, and not like teach you to write as in here's the grammatical and here's some techniques, because again, it's freeing. Make the errors. That's what we have Grammarly for, and we have Microsoft Word or whatever, right? But it is for you to pour yourself out, because we connect to books, our movies, our art that we see ourselves in. And in order for us to get people to connect to our work, we have to show them who we are. Right? You have to be authentic. If you go back to Tyler Perry, that is a part of who he is. So he connected to him, someone else connected to Madea.
Yeah.
Your writing is you connected to you. And trust me, you're going to find someone who connects to your writing. And that's the purpose of one, a Black Rewrite. But the book, when it comes out, so I'm really excited.
Yes.
But I'm trying not to like go back and forth on it, because, and you've published, so you know, there's always like, maybe I could add this, maybe I could. I'm like, it's done. I am done.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Now it's the next step.
Yeah. So yeah. Good. I'm going to ask you, okay, so one thing that I wanted, which struck me when we talked about like what has helped you on your liberation journey, and the answer really being having a community, right? And I just wanted to name what your partner did, right? So there was emotional support, right? Mm-hmm. So there was also material resource, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to be like, I got you. And not every partner is going to do your website, but I my husband is a graphic designer, so I'd be like, I need a logo for this, I need a logo for that, and I need it by Tuesday. We good? We good?
Right, exactly.
So it could be emotional resource, material resource, and it might not all be in the same person. You might need multiple people,
right,
you know, to be able to play those roles. But there's so many social resources. Mm-hmm. All of these things fall under social resources that we have within our communities that should be leveraged, because we need somebody to hold the mirror to say, Nicole, this is the Nicole I see, and you're not a match right now. How can we be a match? So I really love and honor that.
Yeah.
Then the second question I have, or is this like my 12th question? I don't know. The next question I have is, when will the book be released? How can people get it?
Sure. So I am aiming, put it knock on wood, put it in angels' hands. I'm aiming for March. And once it is released, I'm going to have it on my website, and it's going to be available on all platforms, from Amazon to Barnes and Nobles, you name it.
So are we having a book signing? Like, is there going to be a book launch?
You know what? I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I am going to say yes. I'm putting that in the universe. So universe, do what with as you may. But yes, there is going to be something. And, you know, it's a celebration of me and also walking the walk, right? Like, this is the work that I put the audience, the students through, then also to be able to say, I am one of you. This is, again, we're not alone in this process.
Yes.
And here are the things that helped me. This is not a generic anything. I went through this. I know what it is. Look, I could procrastinate procrastination. Do you understand? if I really put my mind to it, and or even if I don't, because it comes with ease. But how do you overcome that? Because people tend to think procrastination is laziness, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the theories behind it, the studies behind it is not laziness. It really isn't. It's psychological barriers. So I attack those also in the book. Like, you're not lazy, but here's what's, and I had to go through that for myself, because I was like, am I lazy? No. But what's the thing? And a lot of it was fear. How am I going to be judged if I do this? All the things that, and everyone has their own, the own whatever barrier that is, their own internal clock that is, I mean, voice or radio that is telling them something negative that's replaying. into their head, and I had mine, and I had to overcome that. It's about, for me, it was also about finding my space. And by that, I meant where in my home or work or on the train that I can quiet the noise and it's serene. And what does that look like? And we really go through all of that. So whenever the book comes, when I'm, you know, because I'm aiming for March, but yes, there will be a book signing. It will also be available on my website, www.blackrewrite.com. And yeah, that's going to be a little thing about it.
Yeah, we'll also put it in the description box so you all can, you'll have the website so you all can find out about when there are courses, when the book will be launching, and all those kinds of things as well. Yes.
Yeah.
One thing I thought a little bit earlier, and it's not necessarily the question, is more as it's supporting what you said. You said something about identification and in books, and it made me think about Black Cake, right? And so, did you see Black Cake?
Of course, and I have the book somewhere around here. It's okay. I'm looking around, but yes.
Okay, who's the author? I just want to give
Williams. Oh my gosh, why am I not begin to see? That's just going blank for me, but
okay.
Yes.
Okay, so y'all can Google it, right? Yeah. But what that was, right? So I identify with many Black stories that I see on TV, but there's not a lot of Caribbean stories, right? And Black Cake itself, and I'm not Jamaican, you know, my family,
right.
My dad, but even this repeated bringing up of Black Cake and what that meant for me, you know, and how it mirrored back your value, your worth, and all those things is it cannot be overstated, right? And so I was thinking about that when you said that earlier, and I was like, remember I said something, I was like, I forgot what I wanted to say. It was mentioning Black Cake and seeing if you had seen it.
Yes, I did. And my cousin was the one, we're talking about my village, my cousin was the one who's like, you need to watch this. And when you speak about connectivity, right? And this author having to know, and I'm sorry, for some reason, 111. For those who know that, you know, right? For reading that and when we talk about connectivity, it made me just, it really cemented the message that I'm trying to send, that it connected with me, because I can tell you right now, literally, I could go in my fridge and there's Black Cake in my fridge.
We have like 2-3 Black Cakes downstairs, right?
And when she spoke in the book, when they talked about tin milk in tea.
Yes.
Wait, what? There's no other way to drink tea. Because regular milk just doesn't do the thing. I mean, you have that Lipton's tea.
Yes.
So it was really refreshing to see that. But when you talk about identity markers, that hit all of my identity markers.
Yes, yes.
So I ordered 2 books. I ordered one for my cousin and I ordered one for myself.
Yeah.
Right? Because it resonated with me. And to anyone, you know, going back to Black Rewrite who comes through the course, that is the message.
Yeah.
There are 8 billion people. You're going to find your audience.
Yeah.
You're going to find your audience. And because if you stay authentic, and that writer, she stayed authentic to her story, even the accents, because a lot of times, you know, they just add the word mon.
Exactly.
They figure it's Caribbean, right?
Exactly. I'm not gonna lie, there were some points where we were cringeworthy, like, but it's the best yet. It's the best yet, you know, that.
And I've never seen on this level in terms of like media, when they talk about the Chinese Jamaican immigrants.
Yes.
They don't talk about that.
Nope.
I've never seen it. I mean, unless you're a part of the culture, it almost like, I remember the first time I saw a Chinese woman speaking patois. It was like ventriloquist. You know, I was like, where is the doll? What? But it was so great for people who grew up in Jamaica and are Jamaican, right? Are the Chinese immigrants who settled there and born there and generations there, to be able to see themselves because they're Jamaican.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jamaican, right? And it, that isn't Yeah, and that wasn't shown. So she really was so smart in tapping into a beautiful array of who we are. And we do not, again, we're not monolithic, right? We don't come as just Black. Don't come that way. Caribbean is just very, just an amazing tapestry of, United Colors of Benetton ad. Like, that's who we are. So yes, Black Kate resonated with me, and I hope that, through the work that you're doing and through the work that I'm doing, that we continue to have people connect to who they are. Because through her connecting, whatever her journey is, or was, for her to create Black Cake, there had to be, I'm going to sit in who I am and I'm going to celebrate my culture. Right? And I hope that the audience loves it. And they do, because people are like, where's part two? Because
Exactly.
I'm like, season two gotta happen.
When we were watching it, it wasn't, we're used to like binging stuff now, right? And I'm like, oh, we watched the first three episodes. I'm like, oh man, the whole thing is not out yet. We gotta wait till Wednesday. It was really good. It was really,
I was in the same position too. My cousin was the one who turned me on to it. And I watched the first, I got there at the first five, all day on the couch again with the robe. And I binged all five episodes. I'm like, I Yes, it was really lovely to watch. But again, it's about connectivity. And she did a fabulous job of connecting and keeping it authentic. And yes, I know that. Even the music, like, I know that music. I know that sound. It's very, very, very real.
Yes, it was. So today was a great discussion. Thank you so much. We talked a lot. We talked a lot about a lot of things. We definitely want to sit with what Black Rewrite does. So make sure that you go and look into it, see how you can get involved. I sat in two of the classes, two, maybe three of the classes, and I saw how powerful it was for the people, for even for me in engaging, and also for, and it was only an hour long, but it was like just so rich and so meaningful. And what happened in the breakout rooms, it was shifting. It was cognitive shifting in a way, and just freedom. Like you embrace freedom in a different way. So definitely all of you who are watching, make sure to look out for that. We also talked a lot about personal and collective liberation and what the relationship to it is, and really just situating ourselves in this liberation discussion. So is there anything that you'd like to say to the audience before we close?
One, thank you so much, sis. And I mean that, sis, in every way. I really appreciate you thinking of me. I really appreciate you creating this platform just for yourself, also. It's part of your liberation,
Yes,
right?
it is.
Like, this is an extension, or this is what we talk about when you bring the community in. It's not just for yourself, it's how you are helping other people. So I appreciate that. When it comes to Black Rewrite, not only for the classes, but if you are an author, and like I said, if the only thing you've ever written was a grocery list, or you are on your fifth book, or you have that book that you started and it's open in your Google tab, and you just always kind of pass it over because you haven't touched it and you're not, you have all the characters in your head, this is a place for you. I would love to be able to, I'm always looking for new and emerging artists, writers. So feel free to contact us at info@blackrewrite.com. Send us your stories, tell us you're interested. And definitely we'll reach out to you and have you featured in our newsletter, because every week we want to be able to feature a new artist, like I said before, for every author, Black author that they take off the shelves. We are here to put 10 more on and plus, because we are fighting back. Our stories need to be heard. They have to be heard. And Black Rewrite is hopefully contributing to that.
Absolutely. Thank you. Until the next time, y'all.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you've loved what we've had to share and want to be the first to get releases of our new episodes and learn about events, download our free app, Living Liberated, in the Apple or Google Play Store.